Welcome to Bram's Lounge. Behind the scenes with the Dracula Radio Play Podcast. By Cryptic Canticles.
So I think this is what, the 70-something recording that we released yesterday? And this is the Cryptic Canticles. We are doing another behind-the-scenes podcast discussing the whys and hows of this production. So we also have a special guest this evening. I'm very excited. Jeff Brenneman is with us. And say hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
You're a bad person.
Oh, yeah. You.
Well, actually, the character he's playing is kind of a bad guy. Actually, he is the bad guy. He is Dracula.
Yes, so, I am Dracula.
Yeah.
There would be no book without me.
Yes, yes. Very excited to have you here. Thank you. This recording, because we're in multiple locations. Bonnie is now in a different state and has moved. So, we are missing her very much, but we know she's in a better place. No, just kidding.
Luckily, I was able to get all of my stuff recorded. Yes. I was able to get all of my things recorded in Bonnie's studio before she left.
Yes.
Because Bonnie's studio is my home base. You're, by the way, listening to Liz Rischel right now, who played Lucy Western Ra. All of my stuff is done.
Yes, actually, that's a great idea, Liz. And so we're going to go around and say who we are. Go ahead, next.
I'm Gwen Schmidt. I play a variety of bit characters, but mostly I'm directing.
Okay.
I'm Sean Lenhart, and I'm playing John Seward.
Dr. John Seward.
And you already know me, because I already introduced myself, Liz Rischel. Lucy, and I'm the script continuity supervisor, and we'll hear more about what that job means later on.
Bonnie?
Oh, hi. Bonnie Bogovich here, calling in from Austin, Texas, formerly from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I play the role of Mina Harker, formerly Mina Murray. And I also pretty much, I'm like the audio mix master. I do the sound effects and music and combine everything for each episode.
And I'm Judy Kirby. And I play a few characters here and there. Lucy Westerner's mother. And I also play the zookeeper's wife. And I think one of the brides of Dracula. So.
I was actually really impressed because I was listening to an episode where you and I both speak recently, and I was like, Judy and my voices are actually kind of similar, which is really great considering we're supposed to be related.
Yeah.
We speak with like kind of a similar cadence and resonance,
yep.
And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, it was. I heard one of the recordings with myself, and I was like, oh, that's me? Wow. It's always different when you hear yourself.
Yeah,
so.
It's definitely.
So what I'd like to start off with this evening, and I don't think we talked about it last podcast, we talked about what we were doing, but we never discussed the why. And, well, I think it's time we talk about the why. What we're doing is we are recording and then releasing the journal entries as they happen. And the calendar date, not the year date, but the calendar date.
That'd be hard to do in the year date.
Yeah, we can't go back in time. So, no. But, you know, would anybody like to discuss the why? Why we just chose to do it this way?
So, we mentioned this briefly in the previous one a little bit ago, but we didn't get into much detail, is that a few years ago, I proposed the challenge to a bunch of people, to whoever wanted to join, to do something called the Dracula Challenge. And it was a group that I led on Facebook where we all procured a copy of the book somehow. And we read each one on the date that they came out. And then we discussed in the Facebook group how we felt about each scene or like what we're excited about coming up and what the process feels like. And the intention of doing that is because it's easy to turn pages in a book and be like, now we're in July. Okay, read a few pages. Now it's August. Read a few pages. But that doesn't give you the sense of how long that time actually was. Bram Stoker was really careful when he designed the book to, when you're Mina and you're waiting for Jonathan to come home and he's 2 months late, and it's easy to not really notice how much time has gone by when you're reading, because you don't have to read in real time. But when you're listening to it or reading it in real time, you really start to develop that connection with the characters and that feeling of, oh my God, isn't he back yet? He's been gone since May, the beginning of May. This would be really devastating. This would be really devastating to, if this were your loved one. And you can walk the path with the characters. It's just kind of a cool idea. The other thing that it does, the book is very close to chronological order, but it's not quite in chronological order. You actually read everything about Harker before you start reading anything about Mina and the other characters. So not only do you feel their struggle as time is passing, but when we put everything chronologically, you don't know what the fate of certain characters are until they happen. For instance, a few weeks ago, we heard from Ian Lemon as the captain of the Demeter, and we put those chronologically where they belong. So you get all of his stuff on the Demeter and you're like, he's the captain. Oh, people are disappearing. What's going to happen? If you've never read the book before, you're like, is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? But if you read that in the book, you would know from the beginning that he doesn't make it, because you would learn that he's dead. And then you get his, and then you learn his story. So
spoilers.
It's a different, well, not by this point. No, they've heard it by now.
Yes.
But it's a different beast when you don't know if these characters are going to live or die and you can hope for them. And then you read about his corpse washing up on the ship and you're like, no, he didn't make it. And it's kind of, it can be sad. It's a different feeling. It's a different way of getting the story.
Yes. Yeah, I did try that challenge, and I recall there were a lot of people talking about recipes too.
Yes.
The food that's in the book. Oh my.
It has, yeah. The chicken paprikash has become one of my rotating meals now, because I tried it after Harker ate it on the first day, the very first day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was really good. I recommend.
We also discussed different uses for apples in the last episode, but that was a slightly different topic.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
When you need to munch a baby and there's none to be had.
Yeah. Don't choke on the
or,
apple.
Or either. To suck on, or to like lick a Jonathan Harker and try to bite him as a female vampire. You know, normal stuff people do with apples.
Yeah. That sounds like a board game. Lick a Jonathan Harker. So now that we've discussed the why, and I think we're going to move on to our, I think I'm going to change things up a bit. I want to talk about some of the challenges. I think we should do that now. Let's talk about some of the challenges, some of the things we've learned.
Time. Trying to coordinate schedules with everybody, especially if you're busy yourself, but trying to coordinate schedules with everybody else. And everybody has different times that they're available and
yeah. Time zones. We have and a lot of people zones. In different countries.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Sean, I want to hear about some of the challenges you faced when you were making the scripts. Sean, one of his jobs was to break the book down into script, character by character.
Yeah, that's been fun. Because we're working off of a PDF of the script, and Liz was good enough to go through and highlight specific characters and really make a lot of like my hunting and pecking much, much more easy than it would have been otherwise. But the issue is that I highlight all the text and then I import it into my script writing software. But it doesn't always get all of the letters when you paste it over, because it's a PDF. It's examining it as an image, not as actual text. So there's a lot of times where it says like, he turned off the light, and it translates to he turn off light. So I have to go through and try to hunt and peck and find all of those. As well, I'm trying to take a lot of things that are written out. If it says like 6 p.m. and it has like literal numeral 6:00 p.m., I'm like, well, that's, you can, you know, or especially if it's like 6:02 or something like that, there's a number of ways you could say that. So I'm translating those into actual text. I read out the word six, stuff like that. Doctor, from abbreviations to that.
I noticed that you did money too.
Yeah, that was fun, because that was just abbreviations. Like, he paid me 60 lowercase s 12 pq, and I'm like, So I have to go in and research what those mean and find out what the actual words are and put them in. And the one I got stumbled on a bit ago, there was another doctor who showed up writing a letter to, I think, Seward, and he lists all of his credentials, and it's just like, you know, so-and-so, PDQ, FFR, QRZ, and I'm like, I have no idea what these are. But I figure if you say, oh, I'm Dr. Seward, MD, then we understand MD is an abbreviation. So in context, he's trying to be abbreviated. So a lot of it's just making it easy for the actors to read. That way they don't have to guess or make choices. And then it makes it easy for myself and Bonnie, because then I also will take the raw audio and then cut out all like little extra breaths or extra space or bad takes, or sometimes assembling a take out of many takes, and then sending all of those options off to Bonnie, who then does the hard work of actually putting the episode together and mm-hmm. adding the music and the tone and the pacing, and really does a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm. On this, and sometimes those can be a beast too. We talk about like trying to line up scripts for different actors. We had an entry, for example, the one that went up today. Today, when we're recording this, is the yesterday was the 17th. I think there were 5 different entries in one episode. Yeah. So even though it came out to only 14 minutes long, there were a ton of files, and in the end, I have like 8 to 15 tracks of audio per segment, and then gluing them all together, making sure all the voices are in the right places. It's madness. Oh, so just... Sean's been insanely helpful helping me like even get half of that prepped, because holy
yeah. Just holy wait until October 3rd. It's 49 pages long. So yeah. Get ready for that. That's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and another point I want to make is that the original PDF we got was from Project Gutenberg, which, by the way, if you haven't encountered Project Gutenberg, go donate to them. They do amazing work with copyright-free books. You can get ebooks all over the place. But because they have their own people transcribing these things in the first place, there are some errors in the original PDF, so I've had to keep my book with me and look things up that way. And yeah.
Usually when we record, we have a bunch of people working off of different sources.
Yep.
That some people are using the script and some people are using the PDF and some people are using the book just to make sure that everything's consistent and nothing gets lost.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers of where an error might originate from. So it's nice to have so many people back-checking and whatnot. And even then, like, we started this project in May, so I started doing the scripting, you know, end of April, around that time. I still have 30 pages left. It's September. Yeah. I still am working on this script, so it's insanity.
It was kind of scary for me because I also had to get that whole book highlighted and out to Sean before he could really start the script. So I was starting on that way early. But one of the cool things Sean does when he builds the scripts is he puts everything in chronological order for us. And at the beginning, he has everybody's name who's going to be in the scene. So I use that. His scripts when I build my synopses. One of my jobs is to write the synopsis for every day. And that can take a lot of flipping back and forth if you're doing the book, just to make sure that you have everything in the right order. But if I use Sean's scripts, then I know that A, who all is going to be in it, because I list that on the synopsis as well. And then B, what order everything is going to appear in when it happens in the podcast.
And Jeff has the most fun job of all.
I was going to point out really quickly, the synopses are what show up on the website. I take Liz's synopses and then I put them on. And that's what you see if you go to the iPod podcast or
iTunes
podcast, or if you go to the website or if you go to the YouTube channel, all those synopses are written down there and I just copy and paste from Liz.
And I put them all on a big shared document so that she can grab them as needed.
All right.
Yay. Google Docs for the win.
Yeah.
Yay.
Huzzah.
Jeff, what are your challenges?
Our project is brought to you by Google Docs.
Jeff, what are your challenges? Since you're the one who you're representing all the remote voice actors we have right now.
No pressure.
Oh God. I don't remember being elected to do this, but
hey, now this is all on you.
I mean, I voted. Didn't everybody vote? Yeah, that's what happened.
Oh man,
I say I
election.
You got the old maid. You win.
I call shenanigans. I mean it's interesting for me because this is really my first time really doing any kind of voice acting like this with someone who actually knows what the hell they're doing helping me along.
Do we?
We do.
Great.
Well, Jeff, awesome. Jeff, you technically you've done sort of voice acting before. I believe you were in a track that I was working on, along with one of our other voice actors, Jesse Buddington, where you played a voice that was very different. Because just the backstory for everyone, I met Jeff Brenneman. He played Nobstablook from Undertale in a track that Jesse and I put together. So can you do the voice for us so we can hear how different you are?
Oh, Metaton, I don't know what I'd do without you. I'd probably do something else.
Jeff, there's somebody in the house.
Oh my god.
I know. So they just like walked up to my mic and then said stuff and then they just ran out. I think it was like the pizza delivery guy.
I don't know how to call 911 in your country, so I'm just going to start pounding the keypad until it works.
Oh god. I don't know the
Oh, it's made of glass. It's offering to sell me a special dialing wand.
You mean Chicago?
Well, he's in America. I mean,
sure is.
I'm in America.
Yeah, Sean Brian Diamond's in Ireland.
I don't know how to read a map.
But yeah, so what I'm saying is, the funny thing is, this is a good example of using really awesome voice actors. I met Jeff as someone recommended it, who's good at silly voices. So then when we had to cast Dracula, and Jeff was like, oh, I want to read for that part. It was like, okay, Nobstablook, sure. Let's hear
that's,
the Dracula.
That's not entirely true. Here's what actually happened. No, I hung out with Bonnie at MAGFest, and I probably said something. We got to talking about like voice acting stuff, and I was like, hey, if you have anything for me, I would love to like do whatever. So I think it was like end of March, early April, I was just like sitting in my living room minding my own business.
Oh yeah. And I called you.
Yeah, and Bonnie messaged me on Facebook and she was like, hey, we need a Dracula. Are you interested? And I was like, well, this is out of left field, but sure, I'll give it a whirl. And then I called in and then I was like, oh my god, what am I doing? Am I doing this right? Oh no, I'm messing up. But then I guess I wasn't, because I'm still Dracula today, so.
Actually, really good Dracula.
Yeah, you were fantastic, and your audition was, I think it might have been Gwen, me, and Liz actually sitting around a table with you on speakerphone. Yeah.
I think it's the same literally table we're sitting around right now.
It was. Full circle.
Not me.
Yeah. Although.
But it was just happy, you know, coincidence that because of Nobstablook, I knew you whenever we met at MAGFest, and then was like, I know a voice actor. Boom. And there you were. And ta-da. So that's the intro of you were and now you're blah blah.
Although Jeff,
I don't think I could have put it more eloquently myself. Like, I mean, that's awesome. That's fantastic.
I know Jeff also had a challenge recently when it came to designing Dracula's voice, particularly in the chapter with the zookeeper. Do you want to describe one of your challenges?
Yes. Yeah, so the challenge there was, well, there is kind of twofold, actually. So when I started recording Dracula, you know, it was back in April and May when Dracula, you know, had a lot of appearances with Jonathan Harker at the beginning of our adventure here. And then Dracula just kind of disappears for a while. So two things. One, in those earlier scenes in May, Dracula has kind of an older appearance, so I had to kind of give him like an older, a little bit more like gravelier voice. And then I didn't record anything for a while. In fact, I think the next time I ended up recording something after we kind of wrapped in June was, I think, a couple weeks ago. So like beginning of September, I think we're talking about now. So it had been a while since I had done the voice, so I had to kind of like warm back up into it. And then the other part was, by that point in the story, Dracula is more youthful. So I had to give his voice a little bit of a more youthful, kind of smoother flavor. So that was an interesting challenge, but I think I managed to do okay with it when we kind of warmed up to it and kind of went through the lines a few times. But yeah, that was tricky, but fun. It's like this whole thing has been just so much fun, and like it's just, I'm having a fantastic time.
Good. Yay. All right. Yeah, that can imagine that would be quite the shift, having to change vocally. I mean, it's one thing when, you know, you're on stage, when you're on a stage and you visually can change yourself, makeup, mannerisms, yeah. But to vocally change your voice, that's quite a gift.
After doing so many sections as the other voice.
Yeah.
I think in a way, it kind of helped that to have that break, because then I just kind of came at it with a kind of a fresh perspective. And like, I hadn't been like in a habit of doing that kind of elderly Dracula voice for a while, but yeah, it was a really fun challenge, and I'm happy that you guys are happy with it. So
I also want to point out that doing recording sessions with Jeff is really fun, because we will do this like super spooky Dracula thing and blah blah blah, and Dracula just ate everything, and then we'll come out with like fart knockers, and then we'll all just start giggling, you know, like
oh fart knockers.
And suddenly everything's just totally ridiculous for a little bit.
I really messed up that part where I'm supposed to eat babies, but yes, exactly. What can you do?
There's a similar thing I noticed when I'm cleaning up audio checks, because like the stuff I get from Cyrus is Van Helsing, it's all the entire night's take. So there's a lot of, I'm only hearing his side of the conversation. And so a lot of the dialogue going back and forth would be like, you know, John Stewart being like, my God, are you mad? He's just like, yes, of course, I'm very mad. He just throws in these little like ad-lib lines that only I get to hear. And I'm like, man, I can't. I left like one in there as a treat for Bonnie, but I mean, they're not getting out in the actual episode, so I
we need a bloopers clip.
We have a bloopers reel.
Yes. Yeah, this should go on there.
I have so many things to throw into the bloopers folder that you guys have. Oh, wow. We've had a lot of moments. Also, a lot of burping moments. We've discovered that at least burps. During a lot of Lucy and Mina sessions, I don't know if it works for guys too, but when you belch right before doing a serious line, it really helps.
No, that's just you. That's just you.
Oh, man.
I'll have to try that.
I don't know. I'm really curious about this technique now. Like, it's not something I've picked up, but I need to start drinking more beer when I'm recording, I think.
I'm drinking beer right now.
Burp method.
I am drinking beer right now, actually. Like, when you think about it, it's kind of amazing I've done all these takes sober, you know? Like, it would have helped maybe if I had imbibed.
Helps with the nerves, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Quickly, somebody trademark that. The burp method.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
The Dracula burp method.
I also found, I don't know about you guys, but to get your into your voice, it can be a bit of a challenge. I know that I have a couple takes that will make it to the blooper reel where Gwen's like, you're American. Your American's coming back. Stop being American. And it's just me going, Poppins, Poppins, Tuppins, Poppins, Poppins, Poppins. Stop. Would you like a cup of tea? Cup of tea, cup of tea. Poppins, Poppins, Poppins. Oh, hello. And then it's like something ending in Mrs. Doubtfire just sets you into Mina Harker. It's weird. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Mrs. Doubtfire. I can definitely hear that.
Lots of lines that start British and end American. Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think.
Oh, yeah, man. I think R's are hard. I think a lot of us still have not only the Pittsburgh R, but we have to kick our American R's.
Which is perfect because the Pirates play in Pittsburgh.
We say R's like a pirate. See, that's the thing about Pittsburgh that is one of the unique things about our dialect, is that we do R. And we really chew it like a pirate. And I had a music director in high school where he was from Texas, which has bad enough R in the first place. And he would turn to us and scream, I heard R! Who said R? And you're like, you know, we'd all be like, and in that particular instance of my memory, a tenor jumped back and pointed at the bass next to him.
Oh, wow.
Under the bus, I believe they call that.
That sounds like the start of a fight to the death or something.
I know. It was great. It was great. That was a great rehearsal.
That's the first time a tenor did something right.
Yeah. All right. For the music geek jokes.
Well, luckily, a lot of us are musicians, and that means that we're used to turning off the R's and when need be. So at least that's not completely foreign, but singing is different than acting, of course.
It really is.
Yes. And that leads me to our next section, Liz.
Mm-hmm.
So you have been sort of the interpreter for us because Old English is like a different language for some people.
Well, at least it's not Chaucer.
True. This is true. But Liz, part of what you've been doing is to
dissect.
Yes, dissect what is written on the page.
Okay. So yeah, there's really two topics here. And the first one, Judy was getting at what the heck are sentences saying? So, like, as singers and as musicians, our number one goal is what is the audience going to hear and what is the audience going to take away? So that translates itself over pretty easily, easily but hard, if you want to think of it either way, is where does a sentence begin and where does a sentence end? Because a lot of these sentences are written with a lot of tangents.
And yes. It's dissecting it's, that is a lot of
it's
the
actually
stuff
very
we're doing.
Much the way people talk. It's just not the way we're used to seeing things written. Yes. Exactly. It's kind of like diagramming a sentence that you may have learned back in third grade, where you have to draw a line and figure out what the sentence is saying, and then draw all those little lines underneath where they talk about different tangents.
Bram Stoker loves his parentheticals.
Oh, he loves
except
them.
They're not parenthesized. They're just commaed.
So if you have, you might have a sentence.
So many commas.
So yes. many commas. So you so might end up commas. Having a sentence like, as I was on my way home from work and I was in the neighborhood and knew you were on vacation, I'm often in the neighborhood at this hour, I figured I would check on your cats. And yeah. then I'd be like, okay, your sentence is, as I was on my way home from work, I thought I'd check on your cats.
Yeah.
And then all the other crap in the middle you have to make sure is a description of the first part. And the odd, like the listener has to be able to hear that, because once an actor loses track of where the sentence is and they're like, let's just get to the end, then it becomes really like, or they're like, what is this saying?
It becomes a mash.
And then the audience can't hear it and they'll tune out. So a lot of it is saying, okay, this is describing this. This is describing this. This is describing this. And one sentence might do that 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
So it can be hard to dissect where a sentence is going so that the audience doesn't get lost on the way there.
I feel the most sorry for Van Helsing.
Oh, Van Helsing has so
the worst.
Much.
And also he's...
Yeah, he's so bad.
And he's doing a lot of the stuff in broken English too. So
yeah. Okay, so that brings us to the other part, which is dialects. Bram Stoker basically wrote like he was writing a play.
So he did work for a playhouse.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, he did. I mean, he was a lawyer, and his hobby was like doing the front house management for a stage house, for one of the famous stage houses. So I think that's influenced what he did. It did actually write like a play. A lot of this stuff really feels like it's written almost like it should be a play.
It really comes alive for that reason too, because A, people talk the way people talk with their little tangents and things, and B, Notice how I'm using two parts of the sentence also that you're able to follow.
And there's another parenthetical.
And there's
right
another
there.
Parenthetical right there. And B, that everything's written in a dialect.
Yeah.
So that brings us to our delightful friend Mr. Swales, who is played by Brian Diamond, who lives in the UK. Who already speaks with a Scottish accent, so getting the rest of that sort of sailor piratey sort of dialect wasn't too strange. If you don't remember who Mr. Swales was, he was the old man who had that long conversation about tombstones with Lucy and Mina.
He was my old man.
Yeah, he was.
Mina usually referred to him as her old man.
Yeah, and he had this big, big condemning speech about the tombstones. So he has this line here. I'm just going to read it out in my terrible, terrible way. Look here all around you, what e'er ye will. All them steens holding up their heads as well as they can out of their pride is a cant, simply tumbling down with the weight o' the lies wrote on them. Here lies the body, or sacred to the memory, wrote on all of them. And yet, in nigh half of them, there ain't beant no bodies at all, and the memories of them beant cared a pinch of snuff about, much less sacred.
So this isn't you deciding to add a dialect. That's as written.
That's as written. And when I was reading this in college, that made me crazy, because it was hard enough to read to understand the Victorian sentence structure, but to get all of that was like, what? I can't. I don't. And
there
then
was,
by the time I figure out,
oh, there was
a lot
of looking up on the internet when we did Mr. Swales' recording.
Yeah,
a lot of looking up on the internet.
To me, that sounds like
I remember that Scottish game.
Pittsburgh dad.
Yeah.
You mix the two together, and that's what you get.
Yeah. So
like once you can get steens means stones, as in short for tombstones, and then wrote on them. And yet nigh half of them. So then to say, All of them steens holding up their heads. So the stones stand up proudly when they're almost falling down because lies written on them, sacred to the memory, when none of their family members cared about these people. Like, I would have to sit down and translate and basically say there's a beautiful section which was about the fact that there are no bodies in the graves.
So to take a step back, this gravestone is in the fisherman's village, basically. So most of the people who were buried there were out at sea
when they died,
and then they were just lost at sea.
Right. So they're saying, how could they be buried here when their bodies are somewhere in the ocean? Did somebody bring them back? How could this person be buried here if they were killed by pirates? Did pirates bring their body back? Of course not. And then, like, they having to bring the preposterousness of this through the text without purely by performance alone was and to get through all of this is really a matter of dissecting the sentence, saying literally what he's saying, saying the overview of what he's saying, and then letting him kind of run through.
And also making sure that it doesn't get boring and it doesn't. So, I mean, there's long passages of this impossible dialect. So trying to make sure that it's understandable, it's intelligible. Sometimes we did murk dialects with certain people. For instance, Mr. Swales, we're like, okay, that's true to the thing, but we need to make sure that somebody can hear it and somebody can understand it.
If it's not legible.
So we had to make sure that people can hear it. We had to make sure that the essence comes through, that the emotion comes through, and it doesn't get boring. And that is the hardest part, that last bit.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of text.
And then there were parts that that Gwen, usually on the fly, if there was something we couldn't figure out, she would look it up. And like when he's talking about Jordy, the guy that blew his head off with a shotgun, whose tombstone was the seat that Lucy and Mina would sit on, that we looked up and said, what's a crooked? So Gwen looked it up and it said, oh, he's a humpback. He's a hunchback. Yeah. And that's why his mom, like, was, you know, kind of
his mom hated
him and that kind of
thing. And eventually he committed suicide. But this tombstone says his mother is so sad that he passed away so young.
Yeah. all of the lies that someone as old as Mr. Swales would know to be lies. And then we were like, oh, I never really got that a crooked thing. Like, that's a nice little piece of flavor that he should keep in mind. Even if the audience doesn't always get it, if the actor understands what they're saying when they read the line, then that's going to come through a little bit and people will get, oh, okay, so there's something to that.
Yeah. And I think what Liz has been doing is very critical, because we've all seen plays or performances where the actor is just, they're just reading whatever was on the page and not really showing that they understand it. And you see this a lot when you go to recitals and someone maybe has to sing in German, but you can tell that they don't know where the accent words are, or if it's about love, where are the passion moments?
They don't know what they're saying.
Yeah.
Going through
no idea.
Yeah. And it totally changes the entertainment experience whenever you have someone who's done the research, or at least understands what they're conveying. And like Liz said, even if the audience doesn't fully understand what he's saying, they get the emotion behind it, or that, aha, that was a joke, he made a funny, or, oh, that was a serious thing, there's some story behind there, just because of how the actor can portray it with their voice. It's really cool, the difference you get. Otherwise, this is a really long book with some really hard to read passages if you're just reading it for the first time.
And of course, then there's also little pieces like Mr. Swales mocks Mina by imitating her. Yeah. But we recorded him before we recorded Bonnie. So when I said, we're gonna have Bonnie, you know, how do you want to say, to please their relatives, I suppose? And then he mocked, to please their relatives, I suppose. So then his performance informed the way Bonnie would say her line. Because he had to imitate her.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's done a little backwards in that way, because people aren't in the same room when they record.
There seems to be a wide array of characters and accents. And I think one of the challenges for me, my mother is English. She's from England. But the accent I had to do for the zookeeper's wife was Cockney. And she does not have a Cockney accent. So I had to do a little bit of research on that, which was fun. I thought that was a good challenge. And I've listened to a lot of the different characters, and they have varying accents. And it's interesting because at some points we have characters that
don't use accents, although I think I've seen some productions or listened to some broadcasts that do. And I was curious, you know, what those are kind of production decisions.
I have a funny story about that. Our original take was that our primary audience would be American, so we wouldn't do accents, was our first thought.
Mm.
And then as we started going through the book and realized the accents are written in, we can't really get around this.
Yeah, once we got to more characters that had accents and once we got into descriptions of places, very in-depth, we're like, okay, this has to be set in England.
Yeah,
okay,
you're kind of committed.
We had to make sure that we did that.
Okay.
I actually, in all three different the characters, that the bit parts I've done three different accents.
Yeah.
Two of them were on the fly. We're like, oh, I'm playing this right now because we need to fill it in. Okay.
Well, it was like, Gwen, quick, you're a nun. Go.
Oh. And I'm like, give me a moment. All right. Mother Teresa.
Sally Field. No.
She also nailed it in like two takes.
That was kind of awesome, actually. It was
and
fun.
There was a place I remember when she was doing the nun where she was testing an accent and said, what do you think of this? And yeah. I was like, I think that's great. But you have so much to say, that accent's going to get grating after a while, so let's try a different take. And she's like, okay, so she did something better, and that's the version, or like different, yeah. And that's the version you heard. And I was like, that would be perfect if you had like four lines, but you have an entire letter.
Yeah.
So we talked about our challenges. I would like to talk about our favorite parts, what we've enjoyed the most. For me, I enjoyed the fact that you could do multiple takes, that you could do it again. So you'd try one thing out, and if that didn't work, then you'd try another way out or something a little more radical and then pull it back.
And sometimes we would put them together.
Yes, and sometimes they would get glommed together. Yes.
Yes.
So to me, that was because I like live performing. I like performing on stage, but it is kind of a breath of fresh air to sit there and be able to take that same thing and go at it at a different direction 2 seconds later.
It's very different. There's a whole bunch of things I'm going to point out. I don't know if I pointed this out in the last one, but I'm going to point it out again if I did, rather. When you're doing stage acting, you have most communication comes through body language. And even though it's subtle, you know, stage acting, you have to enhance it. You have to do, people don't see you from a distance. Movie acting, you can be a lot more subtle, you know, that sort of thing. But when you're there live, doing these things live in front of people, they see your face. They see your expressions. When you're doing it on radio or on podcast or what we're doing, they don't see that. So we have to get that all fine-tuned. But it is nice. But the mistakes also come out more often because it's recorded. The other thing about doing live is that you don't see the mistakes so much because you're enjoying the whole, the bigger picture of the performance. In something recorded, you're hearing it through your ears, you're hearing it very close. So we have to make sure that the emotion is amped up, and as I said before, make sure that the intelligibility is amped up. But, and keeping in mind that you don't have, like, I'm like expressing, by the way, into the mic, and nobody can see this. My hands are going completely wild here. And the people in the room with me can see that, but nobody listening to this could see that. You could understand that that's part of my communication style, what I'm doing right now.
That's one of the best things to do when you're in the booth, honestly, is
yeah.
Do it for real. There's a lot of times when Pursue It, he narrates a lot of chapters, but then he'll be in a conversation. So he kind of switches tenses from like, oh, okay, I'm talking to the audience of whoever's going to be listening to this recording, his diary, to now my audience is, I'm talking to Van Helsing. So a lot of these little jabs, it'd be like, all right, I know what the line is, just look away from the mic and say it to the wall, like you're talking to the person. So the times when, as an actor, you can get off the page, because it's easy for everyone is taught, here's how you read a book, and here's the lilt that you use, and here's how you say it, and here's how you don't. And then they read dialogue that way. I went to the store, and it was really nice, and then I went, and that's not how people talk, that's how they read. So when people are able to get out of that, one of the best ways is hand gestures and gesticulation in general, and looking away from the page is a great way to ground what you're saying.
Yeah, and I find, you know, I do a lot of audio for games and whatnot. Whenever we're recording VO actors for fight sequences and other things, you can tell a huge difference if you have someone actually trying to punch the air versus standing there and trying to make sounds as if they're punching. Yeah. Like, it's just helps convey everything so much better. Also, if you ever have a character running around, or we had like Renfield run through a room recently and he sounded really out of breath, it sometimes helps to be like, before you start recording, bounce up and down, be like, oh my god, my line is really exacerbated now because I'm just, and also things like Sean was saying about talking to the mic in a way, we've tried a couple tricks, I think, in some letters where we've had things where Lucy never got certain letters from Mina and vice versa. So it's like, blah, 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 entry date, something, something, unopened by her. It's like by getting up close and creepy and trying different things, like what would be an aside, you know, to an audience in a theatrical performance. You can do a lot just by how you direct your face to the diaphragm of your microphone. It's kind of cool.
Hmm. But on the other hand, it is a lot less pressure because you don't have to get everything done in one take.
Yes.
So I could do, if I were on stage doing something on the fly, like, hey, Gwen, we need this bit part direct, you know, read right now. I would be like freaking out on stage because I have to be super prepared before I get up on stage. But when it's a microphone and I know that they could just cut it out and Bonnie does her magic and it's great, I'm like, okay, I'll just do it and I'll do it a few times and they'll take the best parts and it's great.
Isn't that the what the most performers have the worst nightmares about, is going out on a stage not knowing their lines, like being naked? I mean, isn't that the nightmare?
Yeah.
Just saying.
And it's like when I record, a lot of the times I haven't looked at something.
I've had auditions like that.
Those are the worst.
Tell me more about your naked auditions.
No, I just forgot all the words. Like, so literally, I stood up for an audition once and I'm standing there and I could see all the words in my head for the piece I was singing. And it was like glass breaking in front of me. Oh. And it all came crumbling to the ground. And I'm like, la, 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 la. And it was so bad.
Oh, dear.
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's one. I love that we started using a mirrored display in the booth whenever I was recording. And it helps so much to have a live computer screen in front of you, whether it be like on an iPad or something else, because the editor, whoever's recording, can splice up your lines sometimes. And since a lot of the Dracula book text has the comma pattern of run on, run on, run on, run on, and Liz helps to break out, okay, what's actually a sentence where a period should have gone, how we would read it. I would do tricks sometimes where I would put things into a text editor window and share it, where we would break up the paragraphs or a really long sentence into how those should be said. And it really helps with the panic of, oh dear God, I have 50 words to read. What am I going to do? You know, trying to find the phrases. It's almost like looking through sheet music and drawing the giant phrase markings, you know, over where a breath would go.
Very similar.
And the breath marks. Yes.
Except for English. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it also helps me on the end, because if we break stuff into logical chunks on the editing side, if I've got multiple takes of something, it's easier to chop it up than to have someone read four versions of a full paragraph. You know, we can do things in little bits or bigger parts and take our time.
Yeah.
Well, for me, certainly, as a voice actor doing Lucy, some of the most fun things is that Lucy's part is very dynamic. Since she's being fed on by Dracula, she gets sicker and sicker. And I think that it's helpful for me to be Lucy and the story continuity supervisor, because much like a feature film, not all of my scenes are recorded in order. So sometimes she's healthier and sometimes she's sicker, and it's sort of like, oh, we need you to do this one right now. Oh, and I'm like, okay, wait, how sick was I right here? I was this sick. And then like, try that with like gasping and breaths and things like that. She sort of undulates in her health. But then also there were some really fun things where she gets very emotional. And I think Lucy's a really interesting character in that she's never really portrayed right. She's a very empathetic person. Everyone thinks that that means that she's a huge flirt, but like, it really just means that she connects with people and she sees the best in people. And I don't think that that comes across in the way that she's performed in most movies and media. And I really wanted to bring that out in her character. So when she gets upset, when she realizes that something's irrevocably lost or that she's hurt someone's feelings, and she starts to get choked up because she says so in the story, I get to examine what happens to myself actually when I get choked up. And I notice my voice pitch is lower, not higher. And so it's kind of fun to like let things fall into the back of my throat and kind of let it get to a point where you can almost kind of feel yourself break down and then put that in the dialect and put that into the character and let that take over. That's really fun. Mm. And of course, not Lucy related, my other most fun thing was pretending to be a baby that gets eaten by vampires. That was really fun, especially because when I stepped out of the booth, I just faced everyone wearing a mask of horror. Just being like, that was disturbing.
It was awesome.
And I was like, thank you. Take a bow. I was also kind of sick, so my voice was already pitching.
That's why you did it then, actually.
Pitching it. Like, I was like, I'm sick.
Right, I'm sick. I can do this right now.
So it pitched up into like the whistle register a little bit more and like broke. My voice broke enough that it just sounded like a distressed baby. Great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that a lot.
Oh, geez. I really enjoy just playing Suet in general because his audience is different every time, I think. It grows throughout the story because everyone else, they're either writing correspondence, a letter directly to someone, or they're writing the diaries, but they're typically meant to be read by someone. Jonathan Harker is writing for Mina, Mina for Jonathan, Lucy's kind of writing for Mina, stuff like that. Whereas Seward's just kind of, he's keeping notes about his medical life. So, all right, he might be the one reading them, so it's not necessarily as serious, but I just, here's this guy, he has a lot of patheticness to him, I find, at the beginning. He can't get the girl that he wants, even though he's this top-notch doctor and he's had all this fantastic training. So I immediately go to Wesley from the TV show Angel / season 3 of Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically Wesley.
Yeah.
Specifically Wesley when he's on the phone with his father, who never appreciates or gives him any approval at all. So the early bits of Seward, whenever he's keeping his notes, but he's also trying to, like, impress his dad. So he has this, like, I want to make this a big deal, but I also want to make sure I'm not making this a big deal. I just want to talk about Renfield and find an interesting case and stop taking, you know, sleeping pills so that way I can go to sleep because my love doesn't like me, blah, blah, blah. But then over the course of the story, as he gets more involved with Lucy and gets a more of a father figure from Van Helsing, he starts to get more confidence. And then there's a note somewhere in there when Mina listens to his journals and she's like, oh, geez, you really broke down. You really, like, you were so impassioned because when Lucy dies, he's just losing it, basically. So trying to find some of those moments there to justify those things. Mm-hmm. So he's a lot of fun. And, man, Wesley. I mean, Alexis Denisov, why not? But my favorite bits, honestly, are dealing with Renfield, because those are the only places where, against all odds, John Seward has confidence. Even though John Seward couldn't beat up my grandmother in a fight. And yet Renfield is this giant, intelligent man who is enthralled by Dracula and crazy. So really, he's more dangerous. But whenever he gets loose, the way it's written and the way that I interpret it, I'm just like, Seward's almost excited. He's like, oh, yeah. And then one of the attendants came to my door and was like, he got away. And he's like, oh, go get the stick. I'll go get him. And he climbed through the window. You guys go around. I'll go through the window. And here's this guy who could murder him. He literally breaks in the door and cuts him and tries to drink his blood. But in my interpretation, in those moments, Seward's like, that little piece of crap, he cut me. I gave blood the other day and now I'm bleeding. And he's drinking the blood. Screw that guy. It's in those little moments dealing with Renfield that he actually has confidence. And I like how that's written, and I like my interpretation of it. So that's always been a lot of fun.
So being that you kind of got inspiration from Wesley from Buffy, does that mean your version in those moments is Wesley whenever he's a rogue demon hunter?
more like post-Dark Wesley, like season 4, late season 3 of Angel specifically. Yeah, but no, he's definitely got his demon hunter moments there. It's just most of the time, I'm just trying to get the voice so that way I have the voice, but I'm trying to focus on the acting and not let the inflection stop me from acting the way I want. So there are some Pittsburgh R's that slip through. Every now and then, you know, he'll answer, and then he'll answer a question. That'll happen from time to time, but I'm not trying to be picky about that because I want to make sure that the acting and the story gets more respect than, hey, wait a minute, that guy's not British. No, I'm not British. Let it go. So
move on.
Stuart is really one of my favorite characters who I feel like is never given enough when it comes to movies and things.
Van Helsing gets, like, every time he has a conversation with Van Helsing, he's basically saying, and then Van Helsing said, by the way, Van Helsing paused and then kept on saying, and Van Helsing gets all the good lines, and Seward's like, yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he doesn't get enough respect. I've gone mad 67 times. But.
Some of my more favorite Seward stuff has come out, because I could totally imagine someone being like, oh my gosh, I have to close the window because this is embarrassing. but he's like an introvert that never quite gets what he wants. But he really is one of my favorite characters, and I love the chance to, you know, to have him reimagined as not a bumbling dolt.
And I think it's really good, Sean, that you put so much effort into the different ways he reads his journals, because. Uh-huh. He has some harsh moments, and there's always someone like, oh, you need a good woman to take care of you. Oh, and like Van Helsing's always kind of putting him down, but trying to reassure him, and it just adds that extra twist of the knife into his sad attempts.
Yeah, it's at those moments he's talking to his dad, like, and then they told me I need another wife. Shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up.
But it's clear from Van Helsing that he has a really high opinion of Seward, and that Seward was like his prize pupil, who was always the best at keeping notes and the best at doing, you know, all these things. It really shows that, like, Van Helsing is also really good at seeing people who they are.
It's a twisted thing that this is the best thing that could have happened for Seward, for his friends to all die and get, you know, infected by vampires. It really brought out his A-game.
Van Helsing is kind of like the counterpoint to Lucy, that he sees the good in everybody. And he picks out the things that are really good about people and about, he chooses his friends and
he's
and
like,
admires them.
He's really that surly guy, the guy who like is really, really grumpy, but has the best heart. You know?
Yeah, we all know some of them.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jeff.
Go, planet.
Jeff, if you're there still.
Hello, hi, yes.
Oh, good. Thank you for hanging in there. I did have a question. I've heard about Sean's inspiration, some of the ideas that he came up with for his character. I'm curious, what are some of the inspirations that drove you to make some of the choices that that you used for your character?
Oh, man. So I think probably the biggest inspiration are just people I know in real life who are actually from... that part of Europe that Dracula is from. Like, there's actually, I mean, there's actually this woman around my age who I see at the dog beach all the time when I take Tara down there, who is from that part of the world originally, and you know, she's been in America for a long time, so she still has kind of like a hint of that, you know, Romanian type accent, but she also has like that heavy like Midwestern American influence as well. So. So I kind of took my cue from that, like, you know, trying not to do like the over the top, I am Dracula, I'm going to suck your blood, blah, blah, blah. But like kind of trying to like not really do that, but do an accent.
For which I
that's
am
like,
grateful.
Yeah, totally. Because I mean, if you've even read like a chapter of the book, you know that Dracula's not actually like that. But yes. But yeah, kind of taking a cue from that and, you know, trying to have just that accent, but kind of like almost restraining it in a way to the point where like, you know, it's clear he's not from England, but he is someone who has been learning English for a long time, like a really long time, like perhaps centuries, you know. So so that's kind of where I draw my main inspiration from, is just, you know, people who are genuinely from that part of the world who speak fluent English.
Okay.
Goodness knows there's enough of a deal made about that when you're asking Harker to correct your English as needed so that you don't sound like a foreigner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gotta blend in so I can eat everyone.
I love that you're not an emo Dracula whose wife looks like Mina and died.
Did emo even exist back then? I'm curious.
Yes.
I mean,
like Byron and Shelley and stuff, so yes.
Byron definitely, yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Child Harold, little punk.
Percy more than, yeah, Percy Shelley more than Mary Shelley.
Okay.
But I like that. I mean, I felt like one of the greatest things about the character of Dracula is that he just simply chooses evil because it gives him more power. He's not somebody who is driven to evil because his wife committed suicide.
And he's such a troll about it, too. Like, those, when he has Jonathan Harker in his residence in Transylvania, like, he wields power in such a trollish way. Like, I recall that one entry when Harker, like, really wants to leave and Dracula finds out. Dracula's just like, oh, you want to leave? Well, why didn't you say so? You can leave anytime you want to. By the way, if you step outside, you'll probably be eaten by wolves.
But besides that,
feel free to go. Like, oh, but you don't want to take your baggage? Oh, okay, that's fine. Do what you will.
I really appreciate Van Helsing's description of him, saying he has the child brain. And basically saying, like, this guy could destroy the world. He just hasn't figured it out yet. He's just slowly, methodically testing things and going, oh, I can't cross water unless it's, like, noon or night. Oh, that's it. Oh, now I can cross water. Oh, I need other people to carry these boxes of dirt for me. Oh, wait, no, I can do it myself. This is a guy who, if he messes up, will explode in a ball of fire. So he's testing things. But he's got so much time on his hands that he can just be calm and cool about it. He never gets dirt. He never gets his hands dirty, basically, except when he wants to, and then he enjoys it.
He has plenty of time to figure that stuff out. And, you know, bringing that up, it kind of reminds me of Light Yagami from Death Note. Man, like, because, like, he spends, like, the first part of that manga, that anime, like, he's testing out his powers. And, like, he's still a child at that time, too. So I think there's
Dracula
kind of a parallel.
Took the chip and he ate it.
Yes. I'll take this potato chip and I will eat it.
I'm the only one in this room that is getting that reference right now.
Yes, the rest of us are like, do you get it? No, I don't get it.
I don't think I went far enough into Death Note.
No, I'm going to go off on a tangent because Light Yagami's voice for the same guy does Amuro Ray in Gundam, and he goes from super pure guy to super evil guy, but that's nonetheless.
Well, I think that keeping Dracula as a character that isn't connected to humans makes him more fearsome because there's really nothing that they offer him.
Well, he's more alien.
Yeah, he is alien. He's a fearsome character. You can't reason with him. You can't beseech him. He will kill you. And he will sleep well that night or that day in his coffin.
And he's so charming, too.
Yeah.
He's delightful as he does it. And the euthanisms he uses when he's talking about literally kidnapping babies.
Oh, my God, the euthanisms.
He's like, oh, I have business.
I have...
Tonight.
I have... business
yes
that I must do on my own only at night.
I can hear you stroking your whispers.
I am literally rubbing my chin right now.
I love all those earlier episodes because a lot of it for me was like finding 700 different sounds of doors and placing them because you're like, oh, you could go here but don't go over there. Oh, you could go there, but never go in there. Have a good night. I'm locking you in your room. I'm like, oh my God. And then when Jonathan, like Harker wanders the building and it's all like, all the things you shouldn't do. He's like, oh, he said don't go in there. I'm going to sleep in this room. What could possibly happen? Do, 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 do. Yeah. Meanwhile, you're in your little coffin going.
Those early entries between Harker and Dracula are such a delicious game of chess. With not knowing how much the other person knows and either over or underestimating somebody. Like Harker and Dracula, by the end, they both know what they know, but it's just easier for them to feign politeness.
Yes.
Just to keep the mask from shattering.
Also, it's Victorian time, so you would never.
Yeah, you would never be impolite. You would never suggest impropriety.
That's where I really appreciate Jesse's performance because you really get the sense that he's unwinding in his head. But whenever he has dialogue, he still has that politeness because for me, I'm like, you're an idiot. Just smack this guy. Run. Why are you? Oh, wouldn't you stay for 3 months? Yes, sure. No, that's not cool. Just leave. You have every opportunity to get out of this. And he's like, well, I mean, politeness dictates we must not, you know, upset our host. I'm like, you idiot. But Jesse does a good job of not making him a buffoon.
To be fair, the front door is locked.
It's a lot of warnings. It's like a delicate dance of like, I can't say this or he'll know I know, but he already knows I know, but he's not saying he knows I know. So I'm going to pretend like he doesn't know I know so that I can do this. And Dracula's like, he knows and he knows that I know.
The difference being,
just be polite.
That just delights him even further.
Yeah, the yes! difference being he's actually on board. Aww. He knows he's dancing, whereas in other interpretations, he kind of realizes, that's weird, there's music playing and my feet are moving. So I appreciate that this interpretation that Jesse's doing.
Yeah.
It's
like,
really fun.
The idea that Harker could leave any time, like, by the same token, Dracula could just, like, suck his blood at any time, too.
Right. And it's like, if the pretense drops, then Dracula will just kill him. So,
what's the fun in that, you know?
Well, you're pretty much a cat playing with its toy, and one of the toys is, hey, you've got a possible nummy snack, which is Jonathan Harker in your castle, but the other one is like, ooh, I get to practice my English and British etiquette by being polite and doing all the polite things before I eat this guy. So, yes. And it's like, so by doing the dance, you're actually getting ready for British society.
Polite thing number one, do not murder your guest immediately. Bide your time. Murder them after 3 months.
If you think about it, that scenario could not happen in today's society. Or could it? I mean,
they're frenemies.
Well, you have frenemies, but then there's, I think there's a sense today when you have such strong characters in a room.
I think that something could definitely come to a head.
Something's going to get real.
Yeah, well,
real
tell you
fast.
What, I think a good comparison might be Hannibal Lecter. If you think about it, if you've ever watched the Hannibal series, I feel like he's the modern day Dracula in a way.
The
series especially. Oh my God, such a good series. But like anytime someone is on to what might be going on, there is that dance of proper manners because Hannibal's big thing is he hates people who are impolite and improper. And I feel like that whole aspect kind of reminds me of the dance we're talking about with Dracula.
It's so funny you say that, Bonnie, because I was actually thinking of a different parallel between Hannibal Lecter and Dracula earlier, in that you know Dracula, you know, showed up a lot at the beginning of our radio play, but now he's like just kind of off for a while. Like he doesn't really appear very much, kind of in the same way that, you know, in Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter doesn't really appear very much either, but they're kind of like the force that's driving everything.
Now that you mention it, you don't blink at all in this entire podcast, just like Hannibal Lecter.
You know too much.
And you also
well,
have
to go. And now the dance begins.
And Jeff, what a magnificent mohawk you have on top of your head, and that motorcycle is fantastic.
Seriously, I'm looking around for cameras now. Like, how do you?
Hey, we've been posting to Twitter this whole time.
I know, right? It's been fun.
I
need to do one of these lives
what
sometime.
Discord looks like.
Yeah, yeah, you
oh,
did.
Oh yeah.
You will give a cash prize to whoever can guess what he has pierced. You know, hashtag Dracula radio play experience, check us out on the web at Crypticanicles and leave a message with, you know, whatever you think it is.
Yeah.
And,
thank
Gwen
you, Sean.
You.
Guess who gets to moderate that?
Well, then that brings us to our marketing spiel here. So we are the Crypticanticles. Ooh. Our podcasts can be found on the www.crypticanticles.com site. Jeff, I don't know. Do you have a website? If you do, now's your time.
I don't have a website, but I do stream on Twitch regularly, so I could plug that, I suppose.
Go ahead. Yes, please.
Cool. So I stream regularly on Twitch. I play video games. I read Homestuck. I do goofy voices. I'm at twitch.tv/Brennamania, which is just my last name with I and A stuck at the end because I am creative.
Nice.
One time I did tell someone that my username is because I'm from a town in Iowa called Brenneman, since IA is like the postal code for Iowa, so it's like, it's Brenneman, Iowa.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Disc.
So we are on Twitter, mm-hmm. and we are on Facebook. So please feel free to go and search for us on Facebook and like us. You will keep
and YouTube.
And YouTube.
Subscribe.
Yes.
You'll get all the new episodes. And you'll be able to get queue up a playlist of all of our previous episodes.
That's right. And our upcoming
ones. In order.
Ones, mm-hmm. Our upcoming ones are coming out very soon. I think we have another one in a day or so.
If you haven't been listening regularly,
there's another one that I'm editing as we speak.
And they're long.
Yeah, we
look at you multitask, Bonnie. Look at you multitask.
There's stuff coming up. I mean, by the time this is out. The thing is, right now, there's episodes all the time. So, because we are now into the point where...
The story accelerates. We are many, many months into the story and about halfway through the book. Mm-hmm. So, yes. And then our story takes us through the early part of November. November 6th is the last day. So, that means the second half of the book happens between now and November 6th.
It is a great place to jump on board.
Right.
Yes, it
is. If you haven't listened to everything up until now, it probably won't take you terribly long to get through it.
No, listen to it in the car. It's easy enough.
Cue everything up.
Even if you want to listen to it after you've already listened to what we have going on now, just jump on board, get acquainted with the story because it's moving. There's nearly a post every day. The action's heavy. And then if you want to get reacquainted, mm-hmm. then go back and listen to the things.
I'm going to point out, too, that we are still doing this despite the fact that I am in three additional shows. Liz has like a million side projects. Yeah. Judy's in school again. Sean has all of his stuff going on. And Bonnie moved to Austin. All right.
And I still have stuff. And Anne has a million stuff going on. And by the time this airs, I will also be teaching at the Art Institute in Austin a class on voice acting for animation and games. Ooh. So
So
you guys inspire me.
So this is always our side project. So we've been trying to keep this has been a project and a half for us.
Truly a labor of love. Yeah. I would say.
Oh we man, do love it. Especially in September.
Cool. It is something that all of us love very much.
So happy Harker's coming back in October and I can take a break. So happy.
Sean and
granted
Bonnie
I have to
like
edit all of Jesse, so I mean it's still just as much work, but I mean hey.
Get to rest your voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Van Helsing.
I get to go back to doing two audiobooks at a time. So that's what I like about this project. I only have to do one voice instead of 14.
Van Helsing may not have... I think he only has one entry of himself. Well, like, he has one kind of, like, note he leaves other than letters he writes to people. Mm. But he has a lot of dialogue in a lot of people's things. I remember there are pages that I just highlighted the whole thing.
Oh.
I was like, whole page, Van Helsing, whole page, Van Helsing, whole page, Van Helsing. So you get to hear a lot more from Cyrus coming up pretty soon.
Great.
So there's a lot Cyrus more. Cyrus is awesome, too.
There's
we have so many talented people.
We have a lot of talented people.
And a lot more episodes.
A lot more episodes. You have a lot of the book to get through between now and November.
Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening, listening.
Yeah, thanks, Judy, for moderating and coming up with some really compelling Judy. Questions for us.
It's been great. It's been a real pleasure. I'm glad I got to be part of this. So, thank you.
Yay.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good. Oh, to have Jeff say good night.
Yes, say good night, Jeff.
Good night, Jeff.
Aha, with a Dracula.
I know. I couldn't help myself.
Give us a creepy ending.
Good night, and sleep well if you can.
Pram's Lounge. Behind the scenes with the Dracula Radio Play Podcast. By Cryptic Canticle.